It's the Dr. David Stevens, and it's hard to believe it's 2018 and we're doing our first Christian Doctor's Digest. Now, I got something to tell you. You know, everybody thinks Christian Doctor's Digest comes out every month and always has. Well, that actually hasn't been the case. It comes out every 2 months until this year. And this year, we're going to a monthly Christian Doctor's Digest with two interviews. And you'll be getting these on your CMDA app or on the web or on iTunes or ever how you like to listen to them. So we'll end up with significantly more interviews this year, more things that are current. We're not looking and planning weeks and months ahead. And hopefully you'll find even a greater blessing in listening to these. You know, as you think of the new year, there's always that thing about new year resolutions. What are you going to resolve to be different this year than you were last year? And we're going to cover a couple of areas that you may want to focus on because they're going to impact you as well as enable you to be more effective in ministry. We're going to talk to Larry Worthen, who's the executive director of the Christian Medical and Dental Society of Canada, and kind of update you on how quickly things have gone from physician-assisted suicide to euthanasia to really coercion of healthcare professionals to participate in physician-assisted suicide in that country just due to a court decision. And then we're going to move to how do you reach Muslims? And we're going to be talking to Nathan. His real name I'm not going to give to you because his focus is on Muslim work. But Nathan Jadim is going to talk about TOAG, a fascinating program for learning how to bubble over and tell Muslims about Christ. You're going to find some very interesting information. Well, I don't want to take too long. Let's get to that first interview. Let me introduce you to Larry Worthen, who's been the executive director of the Christian Medical and Dental Society of Canada, our sister organization just above the border, since April 2012. Larry's got a very interesting background. He has a law degree, he has an MA in theology, and he has a diploma in adult education, and he's married to a physician. Well, as you know, in Canada, they faced legalized physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia since a court decision a few years ago. And I wanted to talk to Larry about how's that impacting Christian physicians in that country. He's going to give us some information that we all need to hear. Larry, it's good to have you on. I wanted to get an update on what's happening in Canada with the I can't say physician-assisted suicide anymore because the vast majority of it is euthanasia going on, medical assistance in dying, MAID. What's happening?
Well, the process is happening all across the country. We're very concerned about it. And at the same time, the government has just started a research project to look at expanding the criteria to include children, people with advanced directives, and people whose primary diagnosis is mental health. So when you talk about the slippery slope in Canada, it's just gone downhill extremely quickly. It's only been legal for just over a year. Already we're looking at expanding the mandate.
People here I know often say, well, you know, it's just willing patients doing this, taking pills. But once it sweeps the country, I think it'll happen very quickly here as well to expand it. We've already seen some efforts. The numbers of people that are doing this, number of patients, I think is fairly remarkable. I read something the other day that Belgium had like 230 their first year and Netherlands are about that. And they're about one third the size of your country in Belgium. You guys had over 2,000. So that is a huge year, the first year of this.
Well, a lot of people don't realize that we have the most liberal euthanasia laws in the world. Hmm. Our criteria are practically non-existent. All you have to have is a grievous or and irremediable illness. The legislation said that death must be reasonably foreseeable, but even that's not as strict as what you have in the United States that are permissive jurisdictions. And this reasonably foreseeable clause has now been challenged in court in a recent case in Ontario. So we're really concerned that this is going to open the floodgates, that people with disabilities will be able to access. And we know that that's a very serious concern because of vulnerable people and their susceptibility to wrongful death.
Yeah, and this isn't just about people who, have physical suffering. It's really existential suffering. Anything they think is suffering and a reason for doing this.
Yeah, even the definition of the term irremediable has to be or could be just any treatment that the patient themselves doesn't really want to take. So we know how serious that can be on mental health issues. Our psychiatrists are telling us that they don't see how they're going to be able to practice psychiatry in a regime that basically when a patient suggests they have suicidal ideation, that the doctor will be required to refer them for an assessment. So it's completely turned the whole practice of medicine on its head.
What are you seeing among Christian physicians there with this whole issue?
Well, there's very serious concerns, in particular around the conscience issue. Mm-hmm. The unique thing about Canada is that conscience is a civil rights issue and health is a provincial issue. So even though the federal government can amend the criminal law, making it legal, it's up to each of our 10 provinces to separately deal with the implementation of euthanasia and also how conscience is going to be handled. So particularly in the province of Ontario, our college there that is the regulatory body has said that doctors must make an effective referral. And our Christian doctors of all denominations are really concerned about this because they feel that an effective referral essentially makes them complicit in the act of euthanasia.
Yeah, so what are you doing about it? I mean, I know you've put together a coalition. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we have a coalition of 10 different national organizations called the Coalition for Healthcare and Conscience. And we've been lobbying heavily in the province of Ontario. Personally, Dave, I think I've been to at least 70 meetings with MPPs in the province of Ontario, as well as senior government bureaucrats.
Wow.
And we've been expressing to them our concerns. So far, it's fallen on deaf ears. The government that is in power in Ontario right now has decided that doctors should have to refer. We've had over 160 doctors march down to the college offices and indicated directly that they would not refer. We've challenged it in court. 5 doctors and 3 physicians organizations have challenged this policy in court. So we're just kind of waiting to see. We're kind of in a very difficult position now. But I want to tell you, we had some very good news last week because of a very strong evangelical politician in the province of Manitoba, which is in central Canada. Their provincial legislature passed legislation to protect conscience so that a referral is not required in the province of Manitoba. This is our first success in one province, and we feel that with the toehold we have in Manitoba, we're hoping we can translate that into taking it right from one coast to the other.
What's the penalty for not doing this, not referring in Ontario? I mean, is there punishment prescribed, or is it losing your license or professional discipline or something under the law? What happens to doctors that take this stance, or could happen to doctors that take this stance and say, I'm not going to do it?
Well, the provincial colleges are the regulatory bodies.
Mm-hmm.
It would be dealt with like any other regulatory body in the United States. It would be professional misconduct. The person would be investigated, cautioned, warned. There would be some form of discipline. If the person refused to do a referral, then eventually they could lose their license. Mm-hmm. And recently, the college registrar in Nova Scotia said publicly that doctors would be investigated and disciplined for refusal to follow along with the policy.
So are you suing in the provincial courts? Are you suing in the federal court? Where are you suing?
We're suing in the first level of the courts in the province of Ontario. Mm-hmm. If you appeal, then you go to the Ontario Court of Appeal, and then eventually to the Supreme Court of Canada. We're hoping it doesn't go to that. I mean, our Canadian Constitution provides us with the freedom of conscience and religion in Canada. We can't believe that the college is refusing our constitutional freedoms. We also can't believe that the courts won't back us up. So we're really hoping that we get a good, strong decision at the first level and that the college is dissuaded from taking it to an appeal.
When do you think you may know that? I mean, how long? I know how the courts work slowly here. I suspect they're the same in Canada, but how quickly do you think you'll get some sort of decision?
Well, we had the a three-day court hearing in June, which is all of the court hearing time. We're just waiting for the judges to get back to us now with a decision. That could be up to 12 months. And I don't really expect anything probably until next spring.
Yeah, yeah. What is this galvanized Christian doctors together? I mean, I suspect more and more people are concerned. What's it done for CMDS Canada? I mean, the organization dealing with this issue?
Well, I think it's actually been a rallying cry. You know, we're all very tired and we urgently ask for the prayers of our colleagues in the United States. But I can say that it's galvanized us. It's put us it made us more dependent upon Christ, upon His strength, upon the power of the Holy Spirit. We're definitely in a spiritual battle.
Mm-hmm.
One nice byproduct for me is Christian unity. We are forgetting now who's in what denomination, and everyone's working together because we have a common threat. And I think that's one welcome byproduct of this whole crisis.
Persecution does that, did it in the New Testament, and is doing it now, draws you together and drives you to your knees, which is a good place to be. We have been praying, and I want to encourage our members to pray, because what's happened there has already been tried here in the state of Vermont, and we were able to get a court decision to prevent it. But I believe it's the ultimate goal of proponents to force people to be involved, of physicians to be involved in this, because and it's not just physicians, is it, Larry? I mean, nurse practitioners can do this in Canada, and it's mainly euthanasia, not physician-assisted suicide.
Oh, absolutely. I think we would be perhaps in a better position if it was physician-assisted suicide. The numbers seem to be more controlled in the U.S. states that have legalized it as compared to Europe. But in Canada, like I said, it's the most liberal regime in the world. And you see it with the numbers. Those numbers are only going to increase. The other phenomenon we're seeing, Dave, is there is the emergence of what I would call a radical secularism. So that, for instance, we're now seeing that one of our leading medical ethicists in Canada is saying that there should be an ethics test for people who are applying to medical school. And if you have a conscientious objection, you should be screened out. So there's a kind of what I would call a new religious intolerance, and it's being driven by radical secularists who basically feel there is no room for faith in medical practice, whether it's religious facilities or whether it's Christian or other religious practitioners. The idea is we're supposed to leave our faith at the door. And as you know, this is completely anathema to the whole a reason for being of our associations, because yeah, we're all about integration and bringing Christ into the workplace and into medical care. And these guys are saying, no, you can't do that. So it's a huge battle, but it's one we can't back away from because it goes so completely against our mandate.
Yeah, and it's the whole idea that, you know, compassion when someone is suffering is helping them kill themselves versus true compassion, which comes down through our faith, is suffering ourselves to help someone in their suffering. I mean, to be by their side and help bear that suffering with them. And I think it also the verbiage, Larry, and I know you see that up there, we call people providers, which is a word I don't like because it sounds like a vending machine. We're professionals. We profess that we are not going to harm you. We profess that we're going to care for you even to our own detriment. We're going to care for you because God, we're responsible to God for how we treat you. And when you take that cheaper view of just a commodity that is being being provided and that faith should be out of it completely, it gets to be a much more scary thing to go to the hospital or even to your own doctor.
Absolutely. I often say, you know, being a lawyer myself, I often say that if the lawyers stayed out of this, the medical practitioners could do a much better job of implementing this. The reason that the policies are worded the way they are is that they are worded by euthanasia activists who are also abortion rights activists.
Yeah.
And they've set it up so that Christian doctors like yourself have no choice but to hand a patient over when they request euthanasia. And this is based on a deep suspicion that anyone who is a Christian is incapable of quote-unquote objective medical care. So it really erodes the whole notion of professionalism. It creates a mistrust or a distrust of people of faith, and basically does not provide support to the many patients who are ambivalent about this procedure and really are looking for somebody to support them in staying alive. One of the most disturbing things about the Canadian situation is that currently palliative care is only available to about 30% of Canadians. Wow. So we've gone and essentially legalized euthanasia without ensuring that people have a legitimate choice. If you can't access palliative care in your home or in your community, or you can't get into a hospice, then you're not going to have a good job done of your pain control. And without proper pain control, you're going to really be more likely to choose euthanasia.
Yeah, yeah. We've seen that even here in the States. It tends to be not the poor. It tends to be upwardly mobile, people that want to be in control of their own destiny, highly secular, that take this step. But then it spins off to other people and more affected as this becomes not just the legalized things, but the thing that's expected of people in the culture if you're suffering. One thing that amazed me, too, I was just, doing more reading on the situation in Canada, that actually at the provincial level, there are organizations set up by the government to facilitate this. In other words, central people that are making all this happen, and the government's very involved in making sure you can find the physician that will do this and that you get through the system and that this gets done and all the rest of it, which goes much further than we do here in the U.S. Most people end up going to Compassion and Choices to find a doctor. But it's not the government that is essentially promoting this, and even been proposed up there that this is a way to save, something I read, $138 million in one of the provinces if we can just get people to do this. Look at all the money we'll save.
Well, that's the other side of the socialized medicine debate, isn't it, that mm-hmm. people don't always think of. I mean, the reality is medical care in today's world is extremely expensive. And I think that, for many Canadians, it's kind of frightening that our medical care system seems to be always out of funds and unable to respond to the medical crisis of the graying population. And so people are seeing euthanasia as a solution to this financial problem. And that's really frightening when that starts happening, because if we truly are a compassionate country, then we should be able to provide people with the support that they need and not be putting people in a position where they need to choose death.
Yeah. I remember hearing that when I was in South Africa, actually, years ago, doing a tour as they were considering legalizing physician-assisted suicide and speaking in law school. And one of the lawyers stand up and says, our healthcare system's so bad, we've got to have this because we can't trust healthcare to relieve our suffering at the end of life. And that was the argument. And essentially what you're saying people are believing and seeing and concerned about there in Canada. What do you see ahead on the future? I know now they're trying to legalize it for children, for the mentally ill, for all the rest of it. That slippery slope is real. How fast is the slipping taking place? And what do you see looking a year or so down the road?
Canadian politics is not like American politics. I know that American politics is very conflictual these days, but I think you should be grateful that you have strong voices on either side of these issues. In Canada, we tend to be more on the liberal side, and there has not been a strong concerted opposition to the advance of euthanasia. And I'm just very concerned that you're going to see a very skewed model that completely puts all the focus on individual choice and on autonomy, and doesn't at all look at medical ethical components like beneficence and things like that. I think that the problem is that this is a philosophy that focuses so much on individual freedom and individual liberty that it fails to understand that all people are not made the same. And some people, many people, are very much influenced by their networks, by their surroundings, by the level of support that they have. My biggest fear is that people are going to choose this because we as a society have failed them, mm-hmm. that they're going to choose this out of despair and loneliness and isolation, and we will, as a society, have failed them. This act, which appears to some to be compassionate, we're actually going to see the truth that it actually is an abandonment, the most cruel abandonment of patience that allows them to face the suffering alone and then choose death.
Larry, I want to thank you for your bold stand and for CMDS there being the voice of righteousness into the culture and the groups you brought together. And we want to pray for you fervently and frequently as we go down the road. What you're experiencing now is where we're heading, maybe at a slower pace, but we can be forewarned by what you're all experiencing. At the same time, we try to hold your arms up as you fight this battle. Thank you for what you're doing.
Thanks very much, Dave. I appreciate your time, and thank all your members for keeping us in their prayers.
You know, just this week I was doing an interview with a liberal newspaper about physician-assisted suicide in the United States and last year and what's going to happen in the next year. And the reporter said, well, you know, what's happened in Canada that you talked about, that's not going to happen here. We're not going to go to euthanasia. You don't think so, do you? And I said, I surely do, because as soon as we have enough states make the decision that we have kind of this tidal wave happening, it's obvious the next step, because the step is, well, physician-assisted suicide doesn't work very well in 20% of patients. They vomit, they throw up the medicine, they don't die. So let's really be compassionate. And let's do it right and have a doctor there and make sure that people don't suffer. It's just the logical next progression. So what we've seen in Canada is coming here. I do encourage you to pray. You can keep up with what's happening in Canada at the website cmdscanada.org. And if you like more educational information on physician-assisted suicide, go to our website, look at our ethics statement on it. We have a whole section talking about this issue, including a paper that we just put up this week of when Larry gave testimony before Parliament on right of conscience and what was happening in physician-assisted suicide for Christian doctors in Canada. You know, CMDA continues to fight this battle last year in 28 states, and you'd be happy to know through our American Academy of Medical Ethics, our doing business as ARM, we now have 54 volunteer physicians, members, who are serving as state directors fighting this in the state, and we're looking to have a couple of those in every state in the country. So if you're interested, let us know. In this battle, we can win it if we fight together. Hey, I got a lot of great events to tell you about. The first one is the CMDA Remedy Conference. This is our first, similar to the Global Missions Healthcare Conference. We know most people come from about a six-hour drive to Louisville, and one of our goals over the last few years is to have a conference somewhere else in the U.S. and then multiply that to other parts of the country. And the first one is Remedy, March 23rd through 24th, 2018, going to be held at the First Baptist Church in Orlando. Plenary speakers are superb. Dr. Michael Johnson, the only African-American medical missionary I know, and Michael's an excellent speaker. Dr. Rebecca Naylor, who's spent many years in India as a missionary. And our next guest, Nathan, who I'm going to be interviewing about how to reach Muslims, is going to be one of our workshop speakers there as well, and many more. It's a Friday to Saturday morning conference. I encourage you to come. Bring students. Bring friends. Come together for a wonderful time of fellowship and inspiration and training on how to be effective missionary no matter where you are. And the next conference you may want to consider is our National Transform Conference, April 26th, 29th at Ridgecrest Conference Center just outside Asheville. It'll be springtime. It'll be beautiful. We're going to have a great group. Lots of students starting to come to that conference as well. Good workshops. It's just delightful. And you need a break. You need to get away. You need to be renewed. And this will give you an opportunity to do that. Be time for recreation and lots of conversations. And it's just one of my favorite times of the year. I hope to see you there. And then if you like to travel, come on with me. I'm going to Hyderabad, India, August 21st through the 26th for the International Christian Medical and Dental Association World Congress. It's just in a beautiful hotel there. It'll give you a chance to be to India if you've never been there. There'll be over 1,000 healthcare professionals from all over the world. It's a very unusual conference, and you'll love it. You can find more information about all these conferences by going to cmda.org. Or if you've got questions, give us a call at 888-230-2637. I hope to see you at least at one of them. I want to introduce to you Nathan Jadim. That's not his last name. We're using a pseudonym because he's involved in Muslim ministries in this country and literally around the world. And as you know, you can be searchable on the internet by your name, and it can cause problems getting into countries or even doing ministry here. Nathan was raised in South Africa as a third culture kid. He returned to the U.S. after college, where he met his wife, and they've been married for 43 years. Went to seminary, pastored a church for many years in Arizona, has raised six children, and a number of years ago at his church began to train members in how to reach Muslims, and that actually moved into a thing called TOAG, which is an apprenticeship process. That sounds kind of unusual, and it is, and we're going to learn more about it during this interview. It's things that will actually prepare you to be a witness, not just to Muslims, but to anyone in your daily life, and you're going to find this extremely interesting. Nathan, tell us about how to reach Muslims. I think that's a term that often scares many Christians. They don't know much about Islam, and they don't know how to communicate. And you've come up with, I would call it innovative training called TOAG, to teach people how to go about this. Tell us about it.
Well, it's strange that when you ask the question that way, I have to go back to the old Sunday school answer and say that my greatest influence with helping people reach Muslims is to first help them fall deeper in love with Jesus. It sounds like I'm being fickle about this because everybody says Jesus is the answer for every question, unless we're giving a real answer. But the fact is that Muslims are fascinated with us being passionate about our relationship with Jesus. They are not passionate about their relationship with God. They're awed by God, perhaps more than we Christians are in some ways, but they don't have a deep, intimate relationship with Him that touches their heart, soul, mind, and strength. And so I've felt like my biggest help can be to help those who are heading into work with Muslims to fall deeper in love with not just Christ's death for our sins, that's a glorious truth, but everything else about Him as well. There's so much more about Jesus that is absolutely captivating. And when we, followers of Jesus, fall deeply in love with Him about all these other areas, it's very natural to bring Him up into conversations in a passionate way.
Let's step back just a second, because I want to get back to that. But what does TOAG mean? I mean, most people are thinking tow like a car, ag like agriculture. No, it has a different meaning than that. Explain what the program's focused on.
It's an acronym for Training Ordinary Apprentices to Go. And it was started in our church 17, 18 years ago to train our own people, because we were sending lots of folks to the Muslim world. Now it's gone viral, and it's training a lot of people through various different internships. They don't all use the name TOAG. In fact, Launch Global was birthed out of the early stages of TOAG. They've now taken this concept and really improved it. So you've got lots of people who are learning to be fascinated with Jesus, learning to share Him in an appropriate way with Muslims before they go overseas.
Yeah, expand on that. Is going deeper with Christ, I understand, and letting it bubble over. How does this apprenticeship work? I mean, how do you take them through the steps to take them to that point where they can be effective in ministry in this country and literally around the world?
Again, it sounds like a very simple answer, but when Paul or whoever wrote Hebrews told us to gather together in order to stimulate each other to love and good deeds, he was giving some very wise counsel. Most of us are not very good at staying focused on reaching others unless we're in an intentional missional community. Mm. And that's been the secret of TOAG, is drawing people together into a community that is very intentional about growing more passionate towards Jesus and then sharing that passionate love for him with others. So the interns move into the community for 9 months. We call it sock distance. They've got to be close enough to each other where they can regularly jump to each other's houses in their socks if necessary. And they basically do life together. They hold their full-time jobs, anything from teachers to doctors to valet drivers. They're doing all kinds of things. But after hours, they're living a normal Christian life in an intentional missional community that's guided and mentored so that they learn to share Jesus passionately with others.
Wow. Now, this is not just located where you are in your state, but literally across the country.
Yes. Especially the launch groups. Launch Global has multiple venues where they're meeting. But in each case, the interns rent out their homes or sell them in some cases and move for 9 months into this missional community. And oftentimes, they stay there until they eventually go to the field, because there's something very powerful about living in this intentional missional community.
Describe what a week's like in their life. I was reading some of your schedule, and how does this work? You talk about 15 hours a week and is, you know, kind of planned out, and I'm sure things happen that are not even planned as people apply these principles. But talk about how this works and throughout the year, because I know there's some training and other things that go into it.
Well, let me take one of my she's a PA in my group right now. She starts work, I think, shortly after 6 in the morning and works until early afternoon, 5 days a week. So she's regularly in a medical situation like any other person would be. But then last night at 6 o'clock, we gathered together. It's our only night of training. We call it halftime because it's where we take a break from normal Christian living out of our faith and get some training. And that went until 9:30 last night. And we cover all kinds of things there, from learning the next Jesus story that we're going to get good at to share, to talking about our wimes. This is a word we use to describe what intrigues me about you, Jesus. So we're always talking about these new insights that we've gained. And so this PA would have shared some of her insights. In fact, we laughed last night that she actually took the prize, had the best wime, because she was talking with one of her doctors just the day before and asked him, "Don't you ever struggle with these kinds of temptations?" And the doctor really didn't know how to answer. And she finally told him some stories about Jesus. And she said it just stopped him. He was just shocked when he realized what Jesus was actually talking about in this kingdom way of living. It was very effective. And then we'll talk about things like what we've read. So last week they read from Bob McNabb's book on spiritual multiplication. We discussed that. We also then go over what activities they've had with the unsaved people in their lives. So we mentor each other during that time, talking about how we can do it better, how we can do it together, what new strategies we can use. We also, of course, pray for our Muslim friends that we're working with. And then on Thursday night, she will meet with us for prayer. That's a normal part of our week. On Sunday morning, they will gather together as a Jesus community and just be the church together. And again, there'll be times of study in the Word of God, but it's always doing things the way it would be done overseas. So there's no sermon. They do a discovery Bible study, because that's the kind of thing that can spread overseas and result in a church planting movement. And then she'll be involved in many activities. She brought a bunch of Saudi women to our last Christmas party, where the girls made gingerbread houses. We're going to have desert bonfires where we invite our Muslim friends to go out in the desert together and just sit around the fire and gab, and she'll bring her friends to that. So that's the kind of thing. Of course, during the week, she's always spending time every day developing this passion, this personal passion for Jesus. So I'm sure her morning started with her taking Luke 13. We're all reading that together. And she did a Discovery Bible study about that and asked herself this question: what is it about you, Jesus, that intrigues me in this passage? We also end each study with a question: how should I obey this? And we don't always come up with an I will, but often we'll come up with an I will of how to apply this. One time she was reading a story, I don't remember which one it was, one of the Jesus stories, and it was about loving your enemies. And she had a difficult coworker, and so what she did to love this person was to plan an outing for her. And she brought a basket full of all kinds of foods and treats and just gave it to her and said, I want to honor you by giving you this so you can go take an outing with friends and just enjoy the day. It was such a powerful thing, but it came out of her interaction with God in the scriptures that morning, and that was her I will.
Wow. Talk about some of the more focused training times. I mean, this is going on throughout the 9 months of the program, or usually 9 months. And then you have some sessions, including getting overseas, I guess, for many of the people in the program.
So during the first of the year, we start something called iLink. We partner with another organization called iLink, where we offer English conversation groups to international students on campus. We only offer them for 7 weeks. It gives us a chance to find out if these students are interested in spiritual things. In order for them to get into these conversation groups, they have to register online, and that's where we can ask lots of questions so that we can learn whether they just want to learn English, which is fine, we'll help them with that, or whether they're interested in spiritual matters as well. And then those are the students that we spend a lot more time with during the rest of the year. During the training, we'll give them little tools. I mean, the primary tool is to give them access to Jesus storing techniques, how to tell the stories of Jesus in a way that reaches to a Muslim's heart. And we practice those regularly during our halftime, and then they share those during the week. We have a lot of other activities that we do too, but they're mainly places to bring your friends as you're developing these friendships. So a bunch of us took guys to a boat festival over Christmas, and just a great time to sit there while we're watching all these crazy people with lighted boats ride around. But we get to talk about spiritual matters with our friends. And then at the end of the time, we take the interns to a place where, God willing, there is a movement underway or about to start, and then let them participate in this by going out with as many Muslim families as they can, sharing Jesus stories, looking for the persons of peace, and starting Discovery Bible studies. And that's been a very wonderful part of the TOEIC experience.
Tell me what God has done through this over the last, 17 years, and in 2000, if I remember correctly. You've literally had people go all over the world out of this TOEIC training.
Yeah, we've got people all over the world now. I mean, we were just talking earlier about some of your family members that are with some of our TOEIGers in Africa, serving a very needy Muslim people group. So they are literally all over the Muslim world. But a lot of them are also still reaching Muslims. They're still reaching Muslims here in the country of America, because we've got somewhere between 3 and 9 million Muslims here.
It's a great opportunity to reach out. And, you know, it's easy to think, well, missions is over there, but missions is right where we are in our own communities. And especially if you go and seek out these people and look for opportunities to build relationships and make a difference. What do you see in the future, Nathan? What would your dream and vision be for this as you move forward? This is a major commitment for people, but if you're going to be good at this, it doesn't happen by chance. And of course, all of us in healthcare know about major commitments of our lives to learn. But this is a very important people group, which is traditionally difficult to reach, but with the right techniques are accessible and can be brought to Christ.
It's very interesting you ask this, because last night we were talking about Bob McNabb's book, Spiritual Multiplication in the Real World. And he was talking about the fact that the research has shown that the level of training in evangelism is not noticeably effective. What makes all the difference is whether you have put yourself in an intentional missional community. And so mm-hmm. what I pled with these interns was, is TOAG will not work for you if you think this is going to build you up and then you can freeload and coast the rest of your life. I plead with you to make this a normal part of the rest of your life. Always be in an intentional missional community, because not only will that make you more effective reaching others, but it makes you love God more. When you're always with other people who are looking to inflame their hearts with passion for Jesus, looking for ways to become more like him, talking about how we can actually learn to obey him and follow him, and then also sharing your experiences and doing things together to reach the lost, it makes your whole life alive. You're being what Jesus called us to be, members of the kingdom of God. So I plead with them, don't think of TOAG as just a training that you'll get and then you can go on and do something else. This must become a way of life. We actually call TOAG normal Christian life, because we think most effective Christians are investing at least 15 hours a week in their time with God, in prayer, corporate and private, in their activities with other believers, in their outreach, in a little bit of study that they might do on their own. That's a normal way that Christians live.
That is so true. Where can people get more information, Nathan? I can think of students listening to this or thinking, I'm going to take a gap year, you know, between college and medical school, or medical school and residency, or in the middle of medical school. And this would be something I'd want to do, or others that are listening to this, including missionaries overseas, saying this would be a great opportunity for me when I'm home for a year to get training in this area and then have a different lifestyle type of evangelism that they're practicing when they go back to where they're serving. So how can people get more information?
Well, they can go online to toag.net. Please realize that that site is 3D. In other words, we're aware that Muslims visit the site, and so it's not as descriptive as perhaps it would be if we were sending missionaries to reach the church of South Africa, for instance, where I'm from. So we've got to be very careful what's there. But that would give you enough information and context to reach as well.
Nathan, I want to thank you for what you've done and for this program and for taking time with us, and mention, too, that you're going to be at the Remedy Conference in Orlando with us coming up in March, and invite those listening to join us there for a new medical missions conference. It'll be very similar to the Global Missions Health Conference. It'll be a great chance to hear Nathan speak and talk to him directly about this and other topics that you might have interest in. Nathan, may God bless you as you continue to serve him, and thank you for being with us.
I appreciate it very much. God bless you guys as well.
I want to give you some great resources that can help you in this whole area of reaching out to Muslims with passion and spilling over of Christ in your life. But knowing the Quran in context is a big issue, and there's a great book by Mark Robert Anderson called The Quran in Context, A Christian Exploration. Another good book, From Cairo to Christ, How One Muslim's Faith Journey Shows the Way for Others. Hearing the testimony of how somebody went through the steps that happens in Muslims as they transition to make a decision for Christ can be very helpful as you're dealing with others. And the third one is Dynamics of Muslim Worlds, Regional Theological and Missiological Perspectives. These are among some of the great resources we have here at CMDA. Muslims are challenging to reach, but they are reachable. And we're seeing from other countries and this country's how God is even coming to them in dreams and visions and causing questions in their heart. God's up to something. And as we look at unreached people groups in this country and overseas, Muslims are a prominent group that we need to know how to address, and medicine's a great way to do that. So take one of these resources and say, hey, this year I'm going to read that book, or this next 3 months I'm going to read one of these books, and become more passionate and knowledgeable on how to raise Christ, tell stories, and point people to him in a conversation. And to get those books, all you need to do is call 888-230-2637, and one of my wonderful staff will help you do that. Or go to cmda.org. You can do it online from your phone or iPad or computer or whatever. And get some good reading, get educated, and God's going to use you in some special ways. As I've been getting ready for our January board meeting, thinking back over the last year, what's happening, and looking forward to the next year, I want to thank each of you who've been volunteering and supporting and praying for us. We're only as effective as our members. And so much of what's accomplished through CMDA comes through our membership. We over 2,500 to 3,000 members volunteer with CMDA each year. So I want to say a big thank you for what you've done and giving us a very successful year, impacting individual lives and speaking the truth in love and supporting and encouraging and training our missionaries. God's done great thing, and I'm excited about the year ahead. I know there are so many problems in healthcare. You don't have to explain that to me. One of the things we're dealing with is just how expensive it's gotten. We've gone up to 18% increase in our healthcare coverage again this year, and those challenges with regulations and malpractice and bioethical issues, and the list just goes on and on. It's easy to get discouraged. It's easy to say, I got to get out of this. I'm tired. But I want to encourage you as you start this year and understanding that God is still in control. He's not surprised by what's going on, that His light shines brightest in the darkness during the difficult times, to the valleys that we're going through. You may need to get a step back and reassess where you are and maybe reorganize your life a little bit. But I encourage you to not abandon what God's called you to do before He releases you to the next step. It's so easy to do when things are difficult. And if we ever needed Christians in healthcare, it's now. And I want to assure you that we're here to support you, help you, resource you, train you, pray for you. Anything we can do to help you be effective, don't hesitate to contact us. CMDA exists for you. And that is our goal with our staff here and our staff spread out across the country. And be assured, as we move forward, we continue to pray for you faithfully, knowing that God can use you, strengthen you, give you wisdom, give you the ability to be faithful for Him and the ministry that He's called you to. And for that, we need to all praise Him. Till we get a chance to get together again, this is Dave Stevens. Talk to you again next month.
Christian Doctors Digest is a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on Christian Doctors Digest are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on Christian Doctors Digest reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.